You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
In Commonwealth, Ann Patchett's latest novel, the mother of two children marries the father of four children, and the members of the two families become one large blended family in an exploration of the aftermath of divorce and remarriage over a 50-year period. In her review in the New York Times, Jennifer Senior called it exquisite and painfully beautiful. It's published by Harper. I'm very pleased that it brings Ann Patchett back to our show. Good to see you again.
Glad to be here.
Your last book of essays, This is the Story of a Happy Marriage, was a very personal look at aspects of your life. Did the experience of writing that book encourage you to write a novel about family life?
It really did, because I've always been very careful not to write anything that was autobiographical. And when I wrote This is the Story of a Happy Marriage, and especially that title essay, which was about the history of divorce in my family, I was really worried that I was going to be stepping on somebody's toes in my family. And I finished the piece, I sweated over it a lot, I showed it to my family, and no one cared. No one cared at all. And it suddenly made me realize that I could write about all sorts of aspects of my life without putting anybody out.
Well, in this case, if the names are changed... The problem for some writers, they've told me, is that friends have assumed that certain characters were based on them when they often weren't.
No, I would think that the people involved in the story, they know what's up. But definitely these characters are based on people in my family, and yet at the same time, they're not. So...
Many of your earlier novels involved exotic settings. Bel Canto is set in the world of terrorists and opera singers in South America. State of Wonder is about pharmacology and drug research in the Amazon. Did you enjoy not having to research this book?
You know, what I realized is I've spent an awful lot of my energy as a writer costuming, making elaborate papier-mâché heads for all of the characters and making exotic scenery and backgrounds. And that's where some of my energy is going. So I just dropped all of that and put them in the suburbs, and I got to spend more of my energy just writing the book.
But I did see some similarities to your earlier novels. Don't the reluctant step-siblings in Commonwealth feel as trapped as the hostages in Bel Canto?
Oh, it's all the same book. I just write the same book over and over again. And really, I think everybody does. But yes, sure. I mean, you could go back to my first book, Patron Saint of Liars, to Bel Canto, to State of Wonder. All of the books are this. Two groups of strangers are thrown together by circumstance and form a society.
And why is that something that is a recurring theme?
It could be because I really loved the Magic Mountain when I was in high school, but it could also be because my parents got divorced when I was young and we married into a family with a lot more kids.
But the Magic Mountain takes place over the course of 7 years. You've given yourself a much larger time span here. A lot of challenges. You created 10 main characters.
Actually, 11. There are 11 main characters because there are 6 kids, 4 parents, and 1 novelist.
And did you begin thinking about this with a specific character in mind, or did you know from the start that it was going to be 11?
I started thinking about this book when I was on a train from London to Wales with my publicist in the UK when I was on tour for State of Wonder. And she had a son named Albie, and she was telling me about her son, and I was thinking, I really want to write a book about a kid named Albie. So that's how it started.
With one kid?
One kid. And then I started thinking about his life and actually thinking about my stepbrother, and it went from there.
And in this, you employ numerous points of view. Did you think of any one person as your main character, as your protagonist?
Well, I hope that it's balanced between the 11, but probably Franny is the main character if you had to pin it on one, and she would be the character who would be most like me, although I am also the aging novelist.
The aging novelist, who in this case is a male.
Leo Posen. Yes.
Who I guess most people are going to think of John Updike or Philip Roth or somebody.
Or Saul Bellow. I was sort of thinking of Saul Bellow. But yes, Updike, Bellow, and Roth were definitely my holy trinity growing up, and even now that I am grown up, They were the three writers that I most loved and had the biggest influence on me.
One of the sisters, the one you mentioned, Franny, is a big fan of this writer's works. And when she meets him, she wonders to what extent he sees himself as Leon Posen, famous author. To what extent do you see yourself as Anne Paget, a famous author who was named one of the 100 most influential people in the world by Time magazine in 2012?
I don't see myself as her at all. It's funny, my husband and I speak about Anne Paget in the third person. Oh, you know, that's an Anne Paget fan, or I need to go out tonight and be Anne Paget. I have a really regular life, and I'm making dinner and doing the laundry and feeding the dog.
Do people sometimes assume that they know more about you than they do because they've read your books?
Sure, of course. And that's fine. That's all part of it.
Now, in the book, there's a novel within the novel.
Yes.
The novel's also called Commonwealth. Commonwealth coming from the state of Virginia. Did people in Virginia actually call it the Commonwealth?
They do. But can I tell you about the title of this book? Because it's a really great story.
Please.
So Sally Mann is a friend of mine, mm-hmm. The photographer. And when she finished her memoir, she emailed it to me, and she didn't have a title. And Sally's work and her life is so based in Virginia. And I read the book, and I said, I think you should call it Commonwealth. I was just starting this novel at the time. And she said, I think that's a really good title. So she took it to her editor, and her editor said, it's a great title for fiction, but it's not a good title for nonfiction. Her book went on to be called Hold Still, which was really a brilliant book and a much better title. But at that moment, I thought, wow, Commonwealth, that's free. And so I really steered my book to Virginia and towards that title. So thanks to Sally Mann, this is called Commonwealth.
The characters react to when they read Leon's best-selling novel that's actually based on their family, the Keating cousins family. Does it perhaps become the official version of their lives, superseding their own private memories?
No, I don't think so. I think, in fact, they just feel the sting of all the ways that they were misunderstood and they got them wrong. I mean, for example, there are two step sisters and two step brothers, and Leo Posen collapses a couple of the characters into one. And you know, what's worse than having someone write a novel about you, having someone leave you out of the novel?
One of the characters, Caroline, who is also a lawyer, says that Leon's book isn't libelous because he covered his tracks. Can a fiction writer be guilty of libel or invasion of privacy? Has anybody ever been sued for that?
I don't know if anybody's ever been sued for it, but certainly a lot of people have done it. I think Pat Conroy is the best example of someone who mined every square inch of his family life, and to his family's great horror and to his readers' great delight.
I'm speaking with Anne Paget, whose latest novel is Commonwealth. She, as you probably know, is the winner of the Orange Prize, the Penn Faulkner Award, and as I mentioned earlier, was named one of the 100 most influential people in the world by Time magazine in 2012.
But you know, that was not because I was a writer. That was because I opened a bookstore.
Uh-huh. Time
magazine was not so excited about my writing.
There have also been films, and in this book there's a film.
Yes.
Would you say that the movie version of Leon's book is even more jarring than the book itself for the family members?
Yes, I think it is. I think the movie is really painful, and it comes much, much later, many, many years after the book's publication.
And one of the characters actually walks out in the movie in the middle.
Actually, he has to be wheeled out because he's in a wheelchair. But yeah, he's the father who very much wants to see the movie, and he's dying and he's in his 80s, is so enraged and horrified by it that the daughters have to wheel him out in the middle of the movie.
Have any of your novels been made into movies?
My first novel, Patron Saint of Life, Patron Saint of Liars, let me see if I can remember the name, it was a long time ago, was a CBS Movie of the Week back in the old days when they had such things.
Isn't Bel Canto being made into an opera?
Bel Canto was made into an opera.
That's a perfect name for an opera.
Isn't that great? The Chicago Lyric Opera made Bel Canto into an opera. It was terrific. It was successful. It sold out. And it was filmed, and it will be on PBS in January or February next year.
There are many themes in this novel, the differing after effects of a tragedy, how people deal with terminal illness, the shifting alliances within a family. Did you set out to illustrate those themes, or are these things that just grow organically while you're writing the next chapter?
I think for the most part, there are things that grow organically. I will say that while I was writing this book, my father was dying, and he died a very long, hard death over the course of 4 years. And so taking care of a parent through a terminal illness was something that was very much on my mind, and I knew that I wanted to put that in the book.
There's also the whole matter of parenting styles here. Was parenting very different in the 70s than it
was.
Is?
It was. I'm so glad you brought that up, because a lot of young people who have read this book have said, oh, the parents are horrifying. They're terrible.
Well, they give the kids a lot of freedom.
A lot of freedom. And really, that's the way it was for all of us in the 70s. Your parents put you outside in the morning, and as long as you came home in one piece at the end of the day, it was a good day. But we were like free-range chickens when we were kids.
And that's despite the fact that your father was a policeman?
Well, my father was a policeman, but I didn't grow up with my father because my parents got divorced when I was very young.
The children in this novel are on their own a lot. They have access to liquor and guns.
And guns, yes. which is actually true.
You had access, I'm not going to ask you about the liquor, but you had access to guns?
I did. When I was growing up in Tennessee, when I was a kid, we lived in the country, and we not only had a lot of target shooting, but we had to do really weird things like take a gun apart in the dark in the closet and put it back together again. We had to clean all the guns. They were stashed all over the house. But when I was 16 years old, when I got my driver's license and drove myself to Catholic school every day, I always had a gun in the glove compartment of the car. It was just that kind of family.
Not anymore?
No. I actually am not in favor of anybody having a gun.
Each chapter in this book jumps forward or backward in time, ahead 50 years and back 30 years. Why did you choose to tell the story that way? Would something have been lost if you had told it in chronological order?
All of my other books are in chronological order, but as I have gone on and on in my career, my timing has gotten more compressed. So my books take place over 3 or 4 months, and I wanted to write a book that took place over at least 50 years. And the only way I could figure out how to do that was to jump around in time, because you have to leave so much out, obviously, when you write that span of time. So by jumping around, it forces the reader to fill in the gaps themselves.
And you also jump around geographically. There's a Zen retreat in Switzerland, the home of famous actress in Amagansett, there's also Los Angeles and Virginia. And in most novels about families that move around, the people have gone west to seek more freedom. But your characters start in California and then are transplanted in the east.
That's true. I think that California is where Americans go to reinvent themselves. And there's the whole idea of the gold rush and the bright future. But really, this is a family that is moving away from their bright future.
In just the few moments we have left, let's talk about what got Time Magazine so excited about you. When did you open Parnassus Books in Nashville?
It's going to be 5 years this November, which is unbelievable. We just doubled in size this summer. It's been great.
So you're going against the trend as well?
No, the trend has changed. Small bookstores are definitely coming back. Independents are on the rise. People are opening new stores, new locations, expansions. It's a good time for bookselling.
One of the explanations given for the closing of the big chains is that you can get pretty much any book you want online. And in a bookstore, somebody has to decide what to make available and what not to make available.
It's called curation. That's very true. But if you go to a restaurant, like, say, the Cheesecake Factory, I don't even know if they exist anymore, and they give you a menu that's 30 pages, or you go to a cafe where you get a menu that has 6 items, it's much easier for me to take a small menu.
Franny is an avid reader, and you mentioned that she's read Kristen Levin's Daughter, the novel that my father swore by when I was a kid. Yeah, by the Norwegian Nobel Prize winner Sigrid Undset. Also, The Radetzky March by Joseph Roth, another great, largely forgotten writer. Are those novels that you recommend to your customers at the bookstore?
Absolutely. Absolutely. The great thing about owning a bookstore is that you can sell anything as if it came out this week. There are so many old books that I love to push on people. And, you know, basically, if you haven't read it, it's new to you.
What are you pushing right now?
I love Act One. Did you ever read Act One? Mm-hmm.
That's Moss Hart.
Moss Hart, exactly right. I never get tired of selling that. Jeanette Hain, The All of It, is probably one of our best-selling books. Every time I go on tour, I take a book with me. So the book that I'm taking this time is called Dogs as I See Them by Lucy Dawson, which has been out of print since 1950. And it's a book of charcoal portraits of dogs.
Now, I find that when I recommend certain books, like The Makioka Sisters by
Kanazaki. Oh, I love The Makioka Sisters.
Or The Man Who Loved Children by Christina Stead.
Yes.
Or Memoirs and Confessions of a Justified Sinner. I don't know if you know that book.
I do.
People's eyes just glaze over, and I know I haven't made a sale. Do you need to have the book in front of you?
It certainly helps, and especially if you put it on a nice display table next to things that people have read, so they make that association. My favorite book of essays is called A Day at the Beach by Jeffrey Wolfe. Mm-hmm. Love that book. And as long as I can put it in their hands and say you have to read it, people are thrilled by it.
Well, I wish I could put this book in the hands of all of our listeners. It's called
I think maybe
Commonwealth,
you just did.
And it's by Ann Patchett, published by Harper's. Thank you so much for being on our show again.
I had a really good time. Thank you for having me.